This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, Ira Flatow will be here with the latest Science Friday. He'll be discussing the XPRIZE, which is meant to stimulate private companies to send rockets and people into space. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Currently, a meeting is underway in Jerusalem. Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas is visiting the Jerusalem office of his Israeli counterpart, Ariel Sharon. This is their second meeting in 2 weeks. Next week, President Bush will be visiting the Middle East. Next week, we'll be covering that visit on Talk of the Nation. We'll also be discussing it in a few minutes. But first, we want to turn to the first leg of the president's trip abroad to Europe, where, among other things, he'll be attending the meeting of the G8. Joining us now is Ivo Dalder. He's Senior Fellow of Foreign Policy Studies at the Brookings Institution, and it's good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Glad to be back.
Much of the president's trip will be focused on that summit meeting. It's France's turn to be the host this year. What are the stated goals for the meeting from the U.S. side, and what are any practical expectations we might have for success?
I think the stated goals are to try to move the relationship between us and many of the European allies into a new direction, to start to focus on the issues that the president would like them to focus on, poverty reduction, which he is trying to push through the Millennium Challenge Account bit, which is an effort to increase American assistance to the underdeveloped world, and also to talk about AIDS. Of course, the president just this week signed a major bill to fund the AIDS initiative that he outlined in the State of the Union address, and he's going to challenge the European leaders to match it. Mm-hmm. That's the formal agenda. The informal agenda, one we're all going to be looking at, is whether or not Mr. Chirac and Mr. Bush and Mr. Schroeder, the three leaders who have been at odds over Iraq for so much, are actually going to shake hands, let alone talk.
Well, protocol calls for the president to have what's called a bilateral, a one-on-one meeting with the host, in this case, of course, the president of France, and he's going to do that, but it was said that he's not going to be meeting with Chancellor Schroeder, or indeed, I think, anybody else but the new leader of China who's going to be there.
Yeah, that's clearly Mr. Bush is in no mood, that's not his style, to start looking beyond what happened in the last few months. Mr. Bush has a very personal, personality-driven kind of foreign policy. He looks at how leaders behave towards him. He has a sort of loyalty meter, and if you support the president on his policies, then you get an invitation to the ranch. If you don't support the president on his policies, you are in the proverbial doghouse. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chirac right now and Mr. Schroeder are in the proverbial doghouse. They're not going to get out of there, even if there is that one-on-one meeting, which I think is going to be pretty chilly.
At the same time, there is going to be a lot of concern in Europe about what they regard as the United States' willingness to go it unilateral, to do whatever it wants, whenever it wants to do it, without much regard for the rest of the world.
That clearly is one of the main reasons why many in Europe were so uncomfortable about the way that the United States went to war, in fact, that it went to war. And Mr. Chirac is now quite open about what he is aiming at. He believes strongly that a single power, as powerful as the United States, is deeply destabilizing to world stability. He believes that Europe needs to become a counterweight. He's quite open about this. He talks about the notion of a multipolar world in which other poles, not just Europe, but also China and India, are there to balance American power, to make sure that it doesn't do, it cannot throw its weight around as much as it wants. Of course, from an American perspective, this is quite ridiculous. The notion here is not just whether one has power relative to another, but what one uses that power for. And the Americans and Mr. Bush and most Americans would argue that in the main, the power is used to advance common interest, not just American interest, and certainly not in opposition to French interest.
There is one other member of the Non-Nine-Niet coalition that was opposing the war in Iraq. That is Russia. And the president will be making a separate trip to Moscow before he goes to the G8.
Yeah, as Condi Rice, the National Security Advisor to President Bush, is reported to have said, the policy of the United States is to ignore Germany, punish France, but forgive Russia. Now, one reason may be that the personal relationship between Mr. Bush and Mr. Putin is vastly better than it is between him and Schroeder and Chirac. And the other reason is that Condi Rice, of course, is a person who has a deep interest in this part of the world. This is what she has studied. It's what she wrote her dissertation on. It's what she had her first government stint in government she was responsible for. And there was a close relationship between the United States and this new Russia that was somehow not destroyed by the disagreement over Iraq in a way that the French and American and German-American relationship seems to have been deeply and negatively affected.
Ivo Dalder, thanks very much.
It's my pleasure.
Ivo Dalder is a senior fellow of foreign policy studies at the Brookings Institution, and he was with us from their studio here in Washington, D.C. Well, in addition to the G8 summit, a major focus of the president's trip will be promotion of the roadmap to peace in the Middle East. For the first time, the president will sit down with Palestinian and Israeli leaders to talk about building a foundation for a lasting peace between Israel and a future Palestinian state. Yesterday, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice had this to say about why President Bush chose to participate in negotiations at this time.
I think that the president believes that the reason that this is the time to go is that the Arab leaders with whom he will meet are all telling him that this is a historic opportunity for peace. And that historic opportunity for peace is only going to be delivered if there is, on the part of all parties, desire to take up their responsibilities. That means that the Palestinians will have to reform the way that their security services work. It means that they will have to take up the cause of fighting terrorism. It means that the Israelis will have to welcome and support and try and help to bring into being a Palestinian state that is viable and capable of existing side by side. And that's what the president is going to do.
Joining us now is Fareed Zakaria, editor of Newsweek International. He's on the phone with us from his office in Manhattan. It's good to have you back on the program as well.
My pleasure.
The president has been criticized for his lack of engagement in the Middle East peace process up until now. What does his decision to go in for direct participation mean now?
Well, it makes all the difference. If you remember, the president for 2 years said he wasn't going to push the Middle East peace process on his schedule, that all kinds of things had to happen first. Palestine had to become a democracy, and the violence had to stop, and things like that. And of course, Palestine is not a democracy. The terrorism has not stopped. But I think the president wisely realized that if there was going to be any movement, it would only come about because of the intense and engaged attention of the United States. That's life in a unipolar world, and the president should have understood that 2 years ago.
At this point, the roadmap has been published, promulgated, and it's been presented to both sides. Both have, with various kinds of reservations, accepted it, at least in principle. Yet it seems there's very little enthusiasm behind this.
Well, I think there's very little enthusiasm, and more importantly, they haven't even gotten to the moderately difficult part yet. For the Palestinians, as Condi Rice said, it means making a real effort on terrorism, which has not yet been difficult because they have not yet had to deal with what to do with Hamas and Islamic Jihad. And for the Israelis, of course, they have not done anything on restricting, freezing, or a settlement activity, let alone beginning the process of dismantling settlements. So for now, there has been no real political price to being in favor of the roadmap. There will soon be a political price, and that's when we will have to see what happens. So in a sense, you know, watch what they do, not what they say.
And they will be meeting, the three of them, both separately and together.
That's right. And I think that what's most important, of course, is going to be the meeting that takes place separately, because it is in those meetings that President Bush will presumably tell the Israelis that they have to get serious about settlements and tell the Palestinians that they have to get serious about terrorism.
We're speaking with Fareed Zakaria about the president's upcoming trip to the Middle East. He'll be going on to that part of the world once he finishes his meeting in Europe this weekend. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And there is one other set of meetings that some people have said might, in the longer term, turn out to be in a way more important than the summit with the Palestinian and Israeli leaders. And that is this meeting with Arab leaders that's going to be taking place, I guess, in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt.
In some senses, I think it's actually more important because the Israeli-Palestinian issue is important. It's important for the president to seem engaged. It's important to diffuse the tensions and the crisis that comes from the United States seeming uninterested and unmoved by the suffering on both sides. But at the end of the day, the dysfunctions of the Middle East stem largely from the complete lack of political reform in those countries, the dictatorships, the extreme repression, which produces a kind of extreme opposition, which morphs into terrorism. So in Sharm el-Sheikh, one hopes that one of the things that the president will talk about is reform in the Middle East, the reconstruction of Iraq, and try to get some movement from these countries on opening up their societies, perhaps first their economies and then their political systems as well. Mm. If you don't do that, my view, even if you had a Palestinian state, it wouldn't change the reality that you have a whole bunch of countries over there, deeply repressive, with demographic explosions, and that is a recipe for some kind of explosion.
Do they accept the United States as an honest broker in the Israeli-Palestinian dispute? Do they accept its role now in the Middle East as the by far the most serious occupying power in Iraq?
Well, I think I don't know what one would mean by the word accept. They recognize that the United States is the most powerful country in the world. They recognize that it is the most powerful country in the region. Indeed, Bush is going to the Middle East in some sense as a conqueror. He has just dislodged a regime 6,000 miles away from the United States within 3 weeks. And so there is a degree of respect, I would say, for that achievement. But there is also a great deal of suspicion of American power and a great deal of suspicion that we are not honest brokers. And, the only way you can address those kinds of fears is to simply get involved and do what you think is right. You're never going to convince everybody. But if there is movement on the ground, whether in Iraq, whether on the Israeli-Palestinian issue, it changes perceptions. My view has always been that the best way to sell America's image abroad is not a rhetorical one, but an actual policy one. That is to say, do things, and your image will change, rather than trying to produce videos that convince people that we're a nice country.
Well, one of the proposals that's likely to be floated at that meeting is for a Middle East free trade zone, an agreement to have this free trade zone in place, I guess, by 2008 or 2009,
right.
Some years down the road in any case. Is that going to be an important proposal?
It's a very important proposal because it gets at this issue of reform in a user-friendly way, which is to say a lot of these regimes are not going to be particularly happy about the idea of political reform, but economic reform is, in a sense, the Trojan horse. Countries want to modernize, they want to grow faster. Free trade is a way of getting them to do it, but of course, in order to do free trade, you have to have increasingly transparent court systems, commercial law, freedom of movement, importation of goods, and when you import all that kind of thing, you are also importing ideas. So, my view, free trade has always had this kind of underbelly of liberty that comes along with it. And as long as we can push hard on those issues, try to make it happen, it will have a positive effect. It doesn't solve everything. Free trade doesn't cure cancer, but it is a big step forward in a region that really is more stagnant than people realize. The entire Arab world, 290 million people, exports less every year, excluding oil, exports less every year than Finland, with its 7 million people.
Fareed Zakaria, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Fareed Zakaria is the author of The Future of Freedom. He's also the editor of Newsweek International, and he was with us on the line from his office in New York. Here are some of the day's headlines from NPR News. Another American soldier was killed in combat in Iraq. The U.S. is blaming Saddam Hussein loyalists for a spate of attacks this week against American troops. And today, government numbers showed a slight improvement in economic growth for the first part of this year. The rate was still considered mediocre by many analysts. More on those stories later today on All Things Considered. Right now, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.